back on Downtown about 8 minutes after 5 o'clock Thursday afternoon, celebrating our anniversary today. And we said, well, who do we want on the show to help us celebrate? That was pretty easy. It's this guy from Defector, host of the Distraction podcast, our friend David Roth. Hello, David.
Hey, Rich. How are you? Happy birthday.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
To your show. I don't know when your birthday is.
My birthday is later, and I'm a bit more than 13.
Well, that's fine. I mean, everything after 13 is pretty academic to me.
Right. I think that's, you know, what's the age? I don't know this. My son is 10. I don't know this at all. When you stop really caring about your birthday, or when you realize that other people don't care so much about your birthday?
I think a big one for me was turning 30 was a huge relief. That was one of those things where I think I'd been sort of agonizing over, you know, what's it going to feel like? And then at some point you're just sort of like, all right, well, you know, I'm probably not going to play in the NBA. It's time to, you know, get my head around this. And then, like, once you get to that sort of realization that you're just sort of like, all right, well, I'm just going to spend the rest of my life trying to be a good person instead of trying to be a prodigy. That's nice. Ken, I would say that you should not start weaning your son off birthday parties just yet. He'd be mad.
Okay. All right. I'll keep that in mind. Yes, and I'm at that age of the spectrum now where my goal is simply to try and make up for all the awful things I've done in the previous years so that recency bias might make people look at me a little better after I'm gone.
Yeah, I'm trying to move the trend line. I think the fact is that, you know, the bottom line stats are not going to be what you want.
No.
I don't think I've got the Jay Jaffe Hall of Fame estimate there. But people could say, you know, like, great end of his career there. But, you know, like, I'm going for the Reach Hill thing, basically. Just continuing to ladle new dollops of experience on top of what is already a pretty well baked cake.
Well, what a great time to have you on as we watch our Red Sox slowly sink toward the bottom of the American East, thanks in large part to your New York Mets.
Yeah, I was there on Tuesday and got to see that one, which was a decently competitive game for them. It was like all of the games. Like, I mean, it was like close until it wasn't close. We've talked about the Sox enough this year, and I, you know, have enough other friends that care about them that I kind of was surprised at how flat they sort of seemed at the end. This just happens with teams, and I don't know that it's the sort of thing that, I, you know, obviously they're not going to fire their manager. They just extended him. I kind of feel like they're just maybe at the limits of the roster that they built. And that sort of seems like a pretty familiar story. It's frustrating to watch. I know. And I can tell, I mean, I was reading about how despondent Rafael Devers was and stuff. It's like clearly like weighing on the team a lot, but I don't know, you know, what all they could be doing differently except for having their bullpen get out.
Well, yeah, and I get the sense that a lot of fans are probably like me. We didn't expect to have it be exciting for 4 or 5 months, so it was a nice ride. It looks like it's going to come up short, but optimistic for the future because of the work of some of these young guys like Jaron Duran, certainly a Sedan Rafaela. There's some hope for the future.
Rafaela is fun. I have never met a Red Sox fan that is capable of having a normal opinion about Sedan Rafaela. Everybody either is convinced that he should be placed on an island where baseball is illegal, or they think that he is like the short version of Ellie De La Cruz and must be protected from harm at all costs. I love watching him. He is a weird little guy for sure. Like, it is a very headlong approach to playing baseball, but I have a real soft spot for guys that play that way.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Me too. Well, good luck to your Mets the rest of the way. I hope they get in and make a decent run. I'll live vicariously through your fandom.
You know that I would never encourage you or anyone else that I cared about to live vicariously through the Mets or my fandom of the Mets, but I'm enjoying it at this point. I mean, I think they're probably going to wind up a game or two short, but it's, you know, it's weird. I was talking to Drew about this on the Distraction because he's a Minnesota Vikings fan and is going into this season with what seemed to me to be a pretty reasonable set of expectations for his team. Like, he's not thinking that Sam Darnold is going to lead them to the NFC championship game. He knows that this is a bridge season. You know, he understands, he has some idea of how many games he expects them to win. And I think I went into the year with the Mets sort of expecting the same thing. They are more or less where I expected them to be. And I haven't been able to be normal about it for a moment. Like, the whole time that I was getting the stuff that I expected to get, I just, because I wasn't getting it in the right order, or because I am an idiot, whatever it was, I was completely, you know, so I'm enjoying it at this part. But if they finish the year with, you know, 86, 87 wins and out of the playoffs, like, I think I would have told you in, like, March that that was a possibility. And yet I will still be really mad about it if and when it happens.
We're talking with David Roth here on Downtown. Yeah, let's talk about the start of football season, but we'll get to the NFL. I have to stop briefly at college football because the personalities are just so much more fun. I have enjoyed nothing so much early this season than watching Brian Kelly get really mad long after the game.
He's the best, man. I mean, I am glad that he's not in charge of any institution that I care about, but he is an authentically weird guy. And I had this vision of him. He was getting real upset after they lost to USC, I guess it was. And he adopts the accent of whatever institution he's coaching and
yes.
Sort of adopts the aesthetic. And so now for LSU, he's like, it's like you just sprinkle a little like seasoning salt on top of whatever his normal voice is, or you like fry it very briefly. So he's got some Cajun notes. He's extremely sunburned, although I guess he's always kind of extremely sunburned looking. But nobody cuts a promo about how disappointed and, shocked at the team's lack of preparation he is like him. All the SEC and like Dabo Swinney type guys are all kind of, they feel too much like congressmen to me. Like, it's just kind of like boring. Like, guys with haircuts kind of like being like, as a Christian, and then just like saying some dumb stuff. Brian Kelly is really, he's working on some rare levels of performance. You as a theater person, I'd imagine, would also be able to appreciate like the quality of what he's putting down there.
Oh, there's no question. And you mentioned, you know, they look like politicians because they figured out all you have to do is be reasonably competitive in the Belt Bowl and you could wind up in the Senate.
Yeah. I mean, once you're there, they will get mad if you don't do anything. I mean, not your voters. They will continue to elect you forever. But other people will eventually be like, why am I calling my senator coach? I don't think I should be doing this. Like, you have to pick one.
Now, Carrie, you're right there in Louisiana. Are you hearing anything from the LSU fans? Are they disgruntled yet with the start of this season?
They were very disgruntled last weekend. Still a lot of hope, thinking that, you know, perhaps it was just an oversight, or, you know, the experience of, you know, going up against an opponent on the road in Las Vegas, you know, a quality opponent. A lot of people saying, well, they should have opened the season with, you know, with a week one to get warmed up, questioning why they did that game. But yeah, there was a lot of very unhappy Tigers fans Monday morning.
That's a shame. You mentioned the conference too, David, and I was thinking about this. You're right. All those SEC coaches sound exactly the same. They look the same. And then you get to some of the smaller conferences, and I feel like every coach there is some version of Tim Walz.
Yeah, which is in some ways like sort of more what you want, I guess. Like there's a level of polish, I guess, you have to apply. Like, I mean, if you remember too that like all these like the SEC coaches, like every one of those guys is getting paid like a major league relief pitcher. Like they're getting they're the highest paid employees in their states, which generally are like low tax, low service states too. So it's like you have to say that at some point, you know, like Nick Saban was the most powerful man in Alabama, like not just by in terms of like how recognizable he was, but like he was getting like a third of the state's budget was just devoted to him. You know, the idea though of like there being a more benevolent version of that is, I don't know. I mean, you want to give Walz credit for being who he is, and he's obviously been a politician now for as long as he was ever a coach. But like, I kind of liked the coaches that were, you know, I went to a D3 school. Like, I, you know, did not play high school football. Those are at some point, like, those are just, you know, teachers that lift weights is like kind of the style of person that most of your coaches are. And like, that's a likable enough type of guy. Certainly when you put it up against, you know, whatever, some of the real hardo like college football types. At some point, like, it's not just the question of, like, would you rather have a beer with Tim Walz than with, you know, whatever, Mike Norvell? It's also a question of, like, what do the rest of these guys do? Like, I think a lot of your, like, the higher-end college football coaches have that sort of, like, they, I feel like they keep the same hours as Mark Wahlberg. You know, like, they get up at, like, 4:15 in the morning to lift weights, and they pray for, like, 90 minutes. Like, it's just a lot of really strange implications just in terms of, like, the way that they act.
A lot of guys that sleep in their office, too, during the season.
Yeah. Yes. That's a – I remember, like, John Harbaugh kept a diary, I mean, as an NFL coach, of being with the Ravens, and it was, there was so much of that in there, just sort of being, like, Tuesday, an easy day. Like, slept in the office, ate some peanut butter crackers for dinner. Like, woke up 45 minutes later in a cold sweat, convinced that my punt coverage wasn't going to work. And just, like, you gotta take it easy, man. Like, you get a hobby. Like, play pickleball. Like, you shouldn't have to live like this.
Speaking of the Harbaughs, Jim, moving on. Michigan, might be some trouble there, but I'm sorry. I've gone to the NFL. Thank you.
Yeah, he executed the John Calipari maneuver with the New Jersey Nets and Los Angeles Chargers standing in for each other there. I respect that he, it seems like everybody's kind of cool with it. Like, Michigan fans are not by nature reasonable, even by the standard of football fans. But I think everybody understood, first of all, he was probably doing some stuff and was going to get caught for it. He won his national championship and he left. Nobody's, like, mad that he deserted them or anything like that. Like, at some point, that guy just needs to go someplace where he can be even weirder than he could at, you know, the like sort of one of the alpha programs in all of college football. I don't know what he's going to do with the Chargers. That roster doesn't make any sense, and it doesn't seem like the team's going to be especially relevant. And yet, it's really hard for me to imagine forgetting that Jim Harbaugh is coaching in the NFL from one week to the next. Like, there's going to be something. I don't know what it's going to be. Like, he'll, like, be on a horse on the sidelines for a couple of games or something. He's going to come up with something. And it's going to, I think it will, you know, remind us all of why he is so magnetic and so frightening.
And I don't know if you're like me. I part of me hates myself because, despite everything that's gone on in the National Football League, all the scandals, all the troubles, I can't help it. On Sundays, I want to be watching games, even if I don't care about the teams.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm excited that it's back. And I feel like it's easy, I think, in some ways, maybe more so for me than for you. I don't know how often you talk about sports or have to talk about sports, but it is part of your job to, you know, like, football is part of your work. It's part of my work too. And it, you know, if I didn't like it, I would probably be more unhappy about that. It's not my number one sport, but, like, yeah, I like it. I like the ritual. I like the sense of watching something at the same time as everyone else. And the games are cool to me. It's just, you know, it would be nice. I think it is probably also impossible if there were a way to watch it without being brought up short a few times a year and just abruptly being confronted with, like, what your entertainment is doing to the people that are providing it. But for better or worse, I've kind of learned to reconcile that alongside the parts of it that I actually like.
All right. I have a little question for you here, because I know you're a movie fan, and there've been a lot of great sports movies through the years, but I think more of them have been about baseball, basketball, boxing has had a lot of good movies.
Mm-hmm.
What's the best football movie?
That's a good question. I'm trying to think of if there was one that I thought was especially good one way or the other. Because there's a lot of sort of like heroic coach, like Remember the Titans type movies. And those simply pass right through me. Like, if I watch them, I don't remember them. I didn't watch Remember the Titans. I don't, you know, Denzel Washington only gets to make so many movies in a lifetime, and I don't want to see him in any movie where he has a whistle around his neck. He's just too good to be using in that way. I have a soft spot for Any Given Sunday, which I know is not a good movie. It is probably the last normal-ish movie that Oliver Stone... And it's not very normal, but there is something about that movie that, which I rewatched a few years ago to talk about on a podcast with friends, like, it was a movie where I, like, thought that I had this kind of, like, episodic memory of it, where I was, you know, I remembered certain scenes, but I didn't really remember the whole movie or what was happening in it. And it turns out that I actually remembered the movie very well. The movie is just like that. And it is, it's a mess, but it is kind of catches at the, at its best moments, the insanity of professional football, like more or less by accident, though, because the movie itself is pretty out of pocket. Have you seen that one?
I have, yeah, and I like it. Like you said, it's not a great movie, but I enjoy it. Now, Bruce Pratt here just wrote down an excellent one that I had forgotten about, North Dallas 40.
Oh, yeah. All right. So I read the book as a kid, which I probably should not have been permitted to read. And then I wanted to see the movie, and that was when my parents stepped in and were like, first of all, where did you find this book? Second of all, no, you're not going to be able to watch it. And I never watched it. I should have. That should have been one of those things that I like filed away at the age of 14 and be like, as soon as I can get this from a video store without it being weird, I'm going to watch it. And I never did. But the book itself is cool. I mean, it was definitely, it kind of had a like a Ball 4-ish type feel to it, although I guess it was kind of fictionalized, right? It was Peter Gent played for the Cowboys, and it's about the Cowboys.
Yeah, and they use players like Lyle Alzado and other guys that, that could relate to the to all the steroids stuff and all those kinds of things. So that's why it had a sense of verisimilitude that I thought was pretty impressive.
Yeah, I remember it being like praised for that, and the book is crazy. Yes. There is a sequel to it that is even crazier that involves like a paramilitary thing, where I guess Peter Gent was just like, I don't know, man, I haven't played football in a while. And so it's got like some sort of like Sicario elements that don't really make any sense. But they never made that into a movie, so the movie itself probably stands on its own. I'm trying to think of what the other good football movies are. There have to be some.
Horse Feathers, Marx Brothers.
Yes, all right.
Longest Yard.
Longest Yard is cool. That has definitely got that like 70s, yeah, sort of like, it winds up being a very anti-establishment movie, even though it's like fundamentally about how cool Burt Reynolds is.
Right. Yes. Yeah. What was the one, was it Dennis Quaid, Everybody's All-American?
Oh, that, I have only read Roger Ebert's review of it, which I remember he loved it. And it's got a great cast. Jessica Lange is in that too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. Is it good?
It's not bad. It was pretty formulaic, but it's okay. What was the one, Tom Cruise and Leah Thompson, All the Right Moves?
Oh, yeah. I remember that being good, but I saw that on Channel 11, New York's movie station, as a child. It was edited and had commercials in it. So I thought it was cool, but I think mostly I was kind of, I don't know, awakening into my heterosexuality as a young child, and I was like, damn, Leah Thompson.
Yeah.
Put her in more movies.
I still feel that way, and when she comes on the show, I'm just trying not to stutter a lot when she comes on.
She's been on the show too?
Yes, yes.
Oh my God! All right. Well, every now and then I will brag on that when I'm watching something with my wife. We were watching we're watching the show Hacks, which has been very funny so far. We're working on it through the last season of it, and one of your buddies, Stephen Tobolowsky, was in an episode, and he's, you know, in everything. But every time that happens, that somebody else that's in the, you know, Hall of Fame shows up, I'm like, you know, I'm on the mug with him. I'm watching the episode, but hey, I'm always proud to having shared this notional space with Stephen Tobolowsky and Leah Thompson is basically, you know, it's not the same thing as me achieving my dream of being a beloved character actor who works steadily on TV and film, but it's, you know, at least I'm associated with them vaguely that way.
Well, yeah, all in the same exclusive and yet strange club.
Yep. I read an interesting story about Dennis Quaid today in Slate, because he's playing Ronald Reagan in a new movie.
Right, and the movie looks just awful. Awful.
And it's apparently terrible. I know a bunch of people that, like, when you know people that have to do, like, movie podcasts, it's, like, a weird plurality of people that I talk to about this online were like, I got to go to the multiplex. I got to go watch Reagan. Like, they don't want to do it. Everybody's kind of got to. But the piece made the, I think, a correct argument that I've been kind of turning over in my head that, like, Dennis Quaid, for a guy who is a very good and compelling actor, like a real movie star type guy, has like basically not been in any good movies. Like he's been in like a few good movies, But then for the most part, he's like doing a good job and being charming in something that mostly sucks, including, I think, in Any Given Sunday. He's like a little too old for the part, but he's like, he feels like a guy that could be like a long in the tooth NFL quarterback. It's certainly not there on the page. The script is insane and the guy's got nothing going on, you know, as a character. But I don't know how that would necessarily wind up happening. But you wind up in 115 movies and, you know, five things that anybody would remember.
What's true, now that you mention it, I'm going through my mental Rolodex trying to think of any good ones that he was in.
And really good.
The Jerry Lee Lewis movie was awful, but he was incredibly watchable in that.
Yes. Oh, wow. Great balls of fire. We are really on the video store shelf right now. So Breaking Away was the one that the story identified as being really good and his first really good performance. And I think that movie's great.
Which also starred friend of downtown, Paul Dooley.
Really? This is too much. My God, all the proximity to Hollywood royalty.
Oh, yes.
It also made the point that if he had been like a little bit older or a little bit younger, he might have had a different sort of career. Like if he was older and making good movies in the early 70s, he would have been working with William Friedkin. And, you know, like, but as it was, it's like he made Breaking Away with Peter Yates, who did some great, you know, like action-y, like thrillery type stuff earlier in that decade. But then after that, it was just, you know, playing Jerry Lee Lewis in Great Balls of Fire. They weren't making movies like that anymore, so he couldn't get to do them.
David Roth, Defector, The Distraction Podcast. David, as always, great to have you with us. Thanks for joining us for our special anniversary show. And my gift to you is that I did not ask you at all about Donald Trump for this entire conversation. That's me giving back to you.
My strategy of turning the entire thing into Dennis Quaid chat worked out perfectly.
That's a brilliant plan right there. That's why we love having you on the show. Always a step ahead of everybody, including me.
Thanks, man. Congratulations on the show. And, you know, I wish you 13 more years or as many more as you want. But thanks, dude. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. David Roth, Defector, the Distraction Podcast here on Downtown.